something in my elbow. I don't know what it is. It's been there. It's kind of like the reason why I didn't throw, you know, when I went to San Diego. We took a little break after that and see, but now, you know, it's been there for a while, and now it's just getting worse.
Swinging a ground ball, fair down the third baseline, past the diving Frazier, into the corner, and that'll score Ian Kinsler. Maven around second, heading to third, and he will make it easily. Triple into the left field corner for Cameron Maven gives the Tigers a 2-1 lead in the fifth. Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a 2-run shot to right is 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The 3-1. Fly ball, right field, deep. Way back and gone. Victor Martinez, number 18. 3-1, swinging a ground ball to second base.
Whoa.
Nice big hop for Kinsler. Hit it hard, but Kinsler gloves it, fields, and flips. And the Tigers make it 7 straight wins.
The Bennett brothers, and they believe that the players don't have enough power in the league, that the contracts are short, they're not guaranteed, and they pale in comparison to the NBA. He said, quote, do you know what the NFL stands for? N-word for lease.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, you probably didn't expect I'd have any comment on that, did you? Welcome to the extravaganza on this Wednesday afternoon on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having a great day. Yeah, I've got a thought or 20 on the Bennett brothers and this unbelievable interview that they did with ESPN. It was more of a documentary on them and their lives and how they get away with running their mouths the way that they do without getting in trouble, saying things that so many other NFL players or professional athletes in general would just be done. They'd be finished for saying, and they get away with it because they are the outspoken Bennett brothers. The piece in question is on ESPN. They're in ESPN, the magazine, and it's headlined, The Bennett Brothers Versus Everyone, essentially. I think that's exactly what it is. Yeah, The Bennett Brothers Versus Everyone. It's a wide-ranging piece. It's on ESPN.com. I'm going to tweet it out here in a few minutes after I talk about it. I don't want you reading while I'm talking. I want you to listen. But I'll tweet it, and I'll put it on Facebook, on Twitter. You can find it at Sports Radio 106.5 on Facebook. It's 106.5 The Ticket, and we'll put it out there. But we are certainly going to have to talk about this today. You and I and Jim, we're all going to talk about it. Justin Rogers, NFL writer for the Detroit News, is going to join me at 3:35. We're going to get him to talk about it. Dennis Maniloff, who writes about the Browns and much more out in Cleveland, we're going to get his thoughts at 4:05. We'll talk about it, and then we'll talk about it some more with you. Not that there aren't other big stories going on. The Red Hot, and I spell that H-A-W-T, Hot. Detroit Tigers, 7 straight wins. The Indians are crumbling, absolutely crumbling under the weight of expectations, not just since they got Andrew Miller, but really, kind of since they had their 14-game winning streak. They've been almost a 500 team, and since the All-Star break, less than that. This is a team that has seen its 6.5. In fact, Jim, what was the high point?
7.
Was it 7 or 7.5?
No, it was 7.5. You're right, because it was just under 8. It almost got to 8 one day. It was
7.5
was the highest.
Their 7.5 game lead in the American League Central dwindled down to 3 as they continue to scuffle and struggle. And I tweeted it yesterday from my personal Twitter account, and then I deleted it. Not because I'm ashamed of it, but just I don't want to be negative. And it was negative. After I saw the score last night and saw the Indians just, get drilled again. Salazar got drilled on Tuesday or Monday night. Carrasco got drilled last night. Now Salazar's on the DL. They didn't pull off the trade for their catcher. They're just getting beat up by the worst team in the American League, the Minnesota Twins. They play them 4 times. In my mind, I saw 4-game sweep, and I saw stretch that lead back out a little bit more comfortably here in the month of August. And instead, they've lost the first 2 of the series with Salazar and Carrasco. Now they're down to 3 because the Tigers continue to hammer opposing pitching, especially Miguel Cabrera, but not just Miguel Cabrera. Another double-digit run day for the Tigers. So we do have some baseball that we can and will talk about. It's a three-game. And what I tweeted last night, by the way, like I said, in a fit of frustration, I said, thank you to the Indians for their – I can't remember the phrasing. Like I said, I deleted it. But it was something to the effect of, thank you to the Indians for this year's edition of Let's Screw with the Fans and Get Their Hopes Up Before the October, before the August Collapse. You know, and I don't mean to be that negative, but I mean, really, everybody's talking about the Indians are the team to beat in the American League Central. Then the Indians, with that pitching staff, they're the team to beat in the American League, period. Then, oh my gosh, they got Andrew Miller, too. Now they're even stronger in the bullpen. The Indians are definitely a team to beat, and all they do is go out there and just get hammered by the worst team in the American League. They're just playing very, very inconsistent baseball, and I got very frustrated with it. And then I deleted it because I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be bandwagon guy. You know, when they start winning again, if God willing they start winning again, where I'm, you know, cheering and chanting and yes and woohoo and all that stuff, when I was frustrated and nervous before. So I'm trying to stay confident. I'm trying to stay positive. But I'm going to keep those negative thoughts to myself if I have them rather than tweeting them out and getting people all worked up.
Now, I couldn't exactly help myself. I didn't delete mine.
What'd you write?
Mine was simply, I don't understand this. I really, really don't. Someone help me. Why is it the Indians can't beat the Twins? And to that effect, 4-7 now are the Indians against the AL worst Twins this season. Against the rest of the Central, they're 26-8.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's this matchup specifically. I don't get. And they've given up double digit runs, couple games in a row. And remember when the 14 game win streak was going on? We heard from and we were talking about things about. And for me, it was I'm getting real close.
Real close to just waving the division. The division's decided.
Right.
Yeah.
We heard from our great sales manager Cody Welling, who's a big Tigers fan. He's like, "Are you really giving the division?" I said, "I'm almost there." And I still have been this whole time in the just about there. I haven't gone on and said, yes, they are 1,000% definitely winning this division. But in addition to, why can't they beat the Twins? This is the first time since the winning streak that I'm a little nervous because it's three games now.
It's three.
The Tigers are finally, honestly, let's call it what it is. The Tigers are finally playing like the good team that they are on paper.
Right.
But let's be fair. They still have a great lineup.
They might even be playing over their heads right now. This seven game, you know, the Indians weren't as good as 14 in a row, and I'm not sure the Tigers are as good as this seven in a row, but they are playing their best baseball of the season.
Yeah, and by the way, two Tigers fans and Indians fans won't like hearing this one. You know, we talk about Salazar now on the DL. For what it's worth, Tigers just put Pelfrey on the DL. Not that that's a big deal, but you know who's taking his roster spot?
Zimmerman.
J.D. Martinez. He's been activated. He should be in the lineup tonight, so that's great. Great news for the Tigers, bad news for the Indians.
Although the better news for the Tigers would have been that Zimmerman was ready to come off, and the reason why is they're mashing without J.D. Martinez. They are just putting up big numbers very, very frequently.
And it sounds like Zimmerman is probably still a few days away because as of right now, the Tigers are basically putting it out there that now with Pelfrey on the DL, Matt Boyd is going to stay in the rotation for a bit. That tells me we're a few days minimum from getting Zimmerman and or Daniel Norris back into the fold.
Yeah, there you go. So the Tigers are obviously coming together a little bit at the right time. The Indians are kind of coming apart at the seams at exactly the wrong time. So we'll talk a little bit about that. There are some other stories to get into as well, but to me, the one that interested me the most, and what's really funny about it is it took the Bennett brothers using the N-word for me to really get going on this. Back when the NBA free agency period started, Jim, and when was that? It was like a month ago.
July
right?
1st.
July
8th being the day you could officially sign.
That's what I'm talking about. When the official signing started happening, and we started seeing the numbers roll in, and we started seeing $64 million for Timofey Mozgov, and $152 million or whatever it ended up being for Mike Conley, and $103 million or something like that for Harrison Barnes down in Dallas. All of these crazy numbers. You remember what happened? Somebody started charting the tweets of NFL players on Twitter in response to those massive dollars.
Right.
And the NFL players, I won't say to a man, but largely were like, "Oh my God, we are doing something wrong. Hello, NFLPA, can you wake up? We've got to, you know, look at how much money these other sports are getting, athletes in other sports are getting compared to what we're getting. And theirs are all guaranteed. Ours aren't guaranteed." We make as much money for this league in terms of revenue generation as they do for theirs. We've got to do something different. But nobody was really belligerent about it. It was just like more like almost joking in a way, like knock, knock, hello, NFLPA, next collective bargaining agreement, get us some of the dollars that the NBA is throwing around. You know, the NFL contracts are certainly as big as the NBA contracts are. The only difference being, of course, you can only get so many commercials into 16 regular season games per team as opposed to 82 regular season games per team for the NBA and 162, of course, for Major League Baseball. So there's only so many broadcasts you can air with so many commercials you can run at so many dollars you can charge. But be that as it is, the NFL still is king when it comes to revenue generation. So they're saying, you know what, hey, we need to get some of those kind of dollars. But then it died down because, like you said, Jim, you said it was July 8th was when they started signing, right?
Yeah, just about a month ago.
So a little less than a month. You know, 3.5 weeks ago, or three and a half weeks go by, I guess I should say. And, you know, nobody's really talking about it anymore. We start to see some big contracts. Obviously, Slay just got his. What was Slay's worth? $52 million,
yep.
I think. Or was it 52?
Yeah, let me triple check the exact number. But
or
it was
am
in
I confusing that,
that
with Tyrann Mathieu today? Tyrann Mathieu just got 5 years, $52 million, over $12 million per year, $40 million guaranteed from the Cardinals today. And that's a tremendous story, by the way. But at any rate,
no, it was a 4-year, $50.2 million extension, 12.55 over the annually.
So Matthew's deal was a little bit lower, a little bit less than Slay's
by a few percentage points. Yes.
Yeah, because his was 5 years, 52. 5 years, 52 million.
It's the extra year.
To 450.2. That's 12 a year. 40 million guaranteed in this deal. Anyway, it's not, this isn't the point about comparing their contracts as much as it is. We saw some contracts get done. We know that there are some guys who are, you know, looking for new deals. Guys like Antonio Brown, who's going to make, I think, 6.2 million this year for being the NFL's leading receiver in back-to-back years for the first time in, I don't know, 40 years or something like that. I can't remember the last time it was done. Oh, yeah, I do. It was early 80s. They said it was Kellen Winslow was the last time a player led the NFL in receptions in back-to-back years. And that's exactly what Antonio Brown has done. You know how much he made last year for 136 catches and 1,800 yards receiving? He made $1 million. All right, he was on a rookie contract extension, so he got a little more security, but he's playing for peanuts. And now he gets up to about $6 million this year, still peanuts compared to his production. And then Rob Gronkowski is another one, and DeAndre Hopkins down in Houston is another one. These are three of the best receiving weapons in the National Football League, all of whom are going to be grossly underpaid this season. But they're in contracts, and you know, some of them have a couple of years remaining, you know, such as Brown, and I think Gronk does too. The club is under no obligation to renegotiate those deals because they signed those deals earlier to get the security that comes with guaranteed money, even though it might cost you in the time that it takes you to get your next deal.
Right.
But so we're seeing these kinds of stories, and that's about all of it. And then here come the brothers Bennett. Michael Bennett, Seattle Seahawk. Martellus Bennett, former Chicago Bear, now New England Patriot. Ended up with the Patriots in March, I think it is, that he moved over to Foxborough. Both of them are extraordinarily outspoken. Both of them are extraordinarily hilarious. Both of them are very, very great quotes. Media love those two guys. They've got something to say about everything, and they don't care, and they don't have a filter, really, about, you know, on what they say. And they were talking about a lot of players. They were bagging on Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, of course, Martellus Bennett's former quarterback when he was in Chicago. He called Cutler the worst quarterback in the National Football League, saying, I would be wide open and dude would throw into double coverage like he just could not see. He said he's terrible. They're talking about Brock Osweiler. You know, what's funny is because we're going to get to the meat of the story here, which is money. They're complaining about money. Brock Osweiler just cashed in for how much? How much did he get to go from the Broncos as a backup to the presumptive starter with the Houston Texans? Brock Osweiler got like $72
million. $72 million, 37
here.
Guaranteed.
Say again?
$72 million total, 37 guaranteed.
$72 million with $37 million guaranteed. And the brothers Bennett were like, dude, I got more sacks, Michael said, than that dude has touchdowns. And Martellus says, I have more catches than he's got completions. And this cat's making all that money. So it's kind of weird that they're bagging on guys for making big bucks, especially when we get to the meat of the issue that everyone is talking about around the league and around sports media right now. And that is their comments on money in the National Football League. They found a way to join money and race in suggesting that the league is still practicing some sort of modern-day slavery against African-American athletes by not paying them more money. I wish I was making this up, but I'm going to read this quote from ESPN the magazine, current edition of ESPN the magazine, just released online at ESPN.com. These days, the article writes, and I'll quote for you Martellus and Michael when they speak. So this is just a quote from the actual article itself. These days, the Bennett brothers are blunt about their shared belief that they're underpaid. Michael, playing under one of the most team-friendly contracts in the league, has been trying to persuade the Seahawks to rework his deal. But when they talk about wealth and NFL salaries, it's clear they're less concerned with money than power. Quote, if you're a player, the only thing you own is your likeness, and your likeness has a date on it. End quote, Michael says. The only way we can be sustainable is to make our own companies. End quote. Martellus points out that football contracts, which are short and non-guaranteed, pale in comparison to the deals handed out in the NBA. Quote, do you know what the NFL stands for? End quote. And then the writer of the article says, no fun league? Not for long? Those, of course, are very common acronyms for the NFL. Martellus finishes his, answers his own question with, quote, N-words for lease. Although he didn't say N-words, they spelled it out. And if I'm looking, now this is one of those very strange things here. I'm not kidding about this, okay? I'm not trying to make light of this. Oftentimes, when people use dashes or asterisks to replace letters in curse words or in, you know, offensive words, they just do a couple of them and let it be. Some of them make sure there's one asterisk for each letter so you can definitely make out what the word is. All right? And in this particular case, there is N blank, 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 S. And if I'm spelling that out, there is an N and then there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It is the full word, if you follow my meaning on that, the full N word, not the one that ends in A, which is often used in rap songs and in other parts of black culture, which some people have excused and said is acceptable because it's their way of taking ownership of that word. And I don't want to debate all of that stuff, that social stuff. But this one looks like, if you count the number of spaces, it's full-on spelling out the word that ends in R-S. Okay? If that makes sense. So it's N blanks for lease. That's what Martellus Wiley said. The article goes on to say it might seem hard to sympathize with this idea. The notion that a pair of brothers who have both made more than $20 million playing football could be dissatisfied with the system that's enriched them. But consider, Michael and Martellus were raised by a good man who lost his job because of the bad actors above him, and that's a different part of the story. They've seen hundreds of players rise and fall with little to show for it, while the suits who profit off their bodies stay in the same place. And this is where we start to get into the controversy that we're going to discuss. The suits who profit off their bodies stay in the same place. They know what it means to be labor instead of capital. Growing up, Martellus says, black people never owned anything. I want to build. I want to make. He turns to Michael and says, how many black owners have there been in the history of the NFL? Zero, Michael says. We're check getters, not check writers. End quote. And that's it. At least that's all I'm going to give you, because that's all that really concerned me, because that's all that really got my attention as I read this article and I listened to some of the discussion about this article today. Because I sit here listening to two very, very extraordinarily well-paid African-Americans complaining that the NFL is unfair to African-Americans. So much so that they call the NFL, or at least Martellus did, N-words for lease. Now, if that weren't bad enough, I want to play for you a reaction to this story by Max Kellerman of ESPN, who's on First Take now. He's Stephen A. Smith's partner in crime, as they go back and forth and battle and debate the issues of the day. It used to be, of course, Skip Bayless, his partner, with Stephen A., and now it's Max Kellerman. I want you to listen to how Max Kellerman responds to this, and then I'm going to respond to it. And then I want you to respond to it, and I want Justin Rogers to respond to it, because to me, this is an enormous problem. An enormous problem. The National Football League is made up of a wide, diverse array of races. There are Latinos playing in the National Football League. There are whites playing in the National Football League. There are blacks. There are Asians playing in the National Football League. There are people from all sorts of foreign countries playing in the National Football League. But Martellus and Michael Bennett wanted to focus solely on African Americans in the National Football League. And his comment that they are N-words for lease prompted this unbelievable comment from Max Kellerman that I will let speak for itself.
If you look at the content of what was said, it's uncontroversial. That's an uncontroversial comment in terms of the content. Has there been a history in this country of exploiting African-American labor? Duh. I mean, like, this is not news. That's uncontroversial.
I'll stop there for a moment to gather my brain and stuff it back inside of my head because it's leaking out my ears. It's uncontroversial because in this country there is a history of exploiting black labor. Is he saying that a league that just gave Tyrann Mathieu $52 million for 5 years is exploiting him? A guy who had drug problems and problems with the law in the last few years of his life, his college playing days, which cost him a great deal of money, probably, and time in his early part of his NFL career. We're talking about a league which is paying people tens of millions of dollars to play the game that God gave them the talent to play. And he and they are calling it exploiting them. Why? Because the player himself doesn't make as much as the owner of the club does. And he's comparing that to exploiting black labor in the history of the United States going all the way back to the dark days of slavery. The worst time in American history. The most evil time in American history. Where in the world is he going with that? Let's find out.
And football, whether we like it or not, I know it takes kids off the street and it gives focus and it teaches the various values that we like very much, et cetera, structures time. This goes for white players, too, obviously. I mean, there are rich white kids playing quarterbacks, quarterback, and the dads are paying a lot of money for them to do it. But
just to pause that again there, why the emphasis on race? Rich white kids playing quarterback, too? Wait a minute. I think maybe one of the wealthiest quarterbacks in the league right now happens to be its reigning MVP, Cam Newton. Is there a pay scale for white quarterbacks that is different than the one for black quarterbacks? I may have missed that. Is there a salary cap that can be exceeded for white players but must be held strictly for black? I must have missed that too. I don't understand the focus here. The ongoing intentional division between black and white in America now on our sports fields and in our sports conversation between players like Michael and Martellus Bennett and this nut job on First Take.
What is also true is that football's exploitation on this level. What we're asking these players to do with their bodies is exploitative. And so,
okay, first of all, the word, Mr. Kellerman, is exploitative. Learn the emphasis and the accent on the right syllable. Second of all, did you hear what he just said? What we are asking players to do on a football field is exploitative. Wait a minute. What? Are owners and general managers going out into the streets of the United States of America, grabbing people at the point of a gun or at the tip of a sword, and saying, get out there and do this labor for me? and I'll pay you however many millions of dollars I want to pay you, but you're doing this for me? Or are these guys signing up for the richest jobs that they could possibly ever get in their lives? Because let's be honest, the vast majority of Division I college football players, be they black or white, aren't graduating. The ones who go to the NFL aren't graduating with degrees. And if they don't graduate with degrees and they don't have football, and if they don't want to be exploited by the National Football League, they're going to end up driving truck. Or they're going to end up laying brick. Or they're going to end up hanging drywall. Now, the ones who go back to school, again, white and or black, doesn't matter, who can get their degrees and go on to something else, maybe be CEOs. But they're still, as CEOs, not going to make $10 million a year. Without the NFL, they'll never have a chance of making this much money again. And this guy, Kellerman, on ESPN, which is just becoming one of the worst mainstream media outlets in the world, is trying to call the NFL exploitative of African Americans for paying them tens of millions of dollars more than they could ever make in the real world that you and I live in? Let me ask you a question as you listen to the show, wherever you're driving right now. Have you ever had an opportunity to make $5 or $10 million in a year? No? Me neither. You want to know why? Because I can't run a 4.3 and I can't bench press 225 pounds 38 times. Because I wasn't blessed with the gifts that these guys were gifted by God and then took advantage of by working hard. I have to make real money for a living, regular money, like you make for a living. And they're calling this exploitative. One more clip.
What is also true is that football's exploitation on this level. What we're asking these players to do with their bodies is exploitative. And so it is a continuation in certain respects of rich white guys, by rich white guys, of African-American labor.
I give up. I give up. Dumbest human being in the history of sports, Max Kellerman is. This stupid son of a blank just called white owners in the National Football League slave owners, exploiting black athletes as their slaves. It is something that has been referred to in many, many other places, including the NFL scouting combine, where they put them up there on a stand and they poke them and prod and measure their body fat and they test their muscle mass and they check their strength and their speed and so on and so forth. And some say that is a reminder of going back to slave auctions back in again, that horrible, horrible period of American human history. That's what this guy is comparing this to. I have never heard anything as unbelievably ridiculous, divisive, insensitive, offensive in my life, comparing the plight of people who were forced into servitude to people who are making tens of millions of dollars by choosing this career, choosing it over other careers that would pay them 1/150th, if they're fortunate, of what they're making now. I'm going to talk this over with you, Cushlin, and Justin Rogers, who joins us next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The Extravaganza rolls on now. It is 3:40. Time to bring in another great voice, tremendous voice of the NFL. He's been covering the Detroit Lions for many years. I don't even know how many years it is now. He was with MLive.com. He is now writing and covering the club for Detroit News, the Detroit News, and that is Justin Rogers, back once again right here in Toledo on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Justin, how are you?
Good, Bob. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure to have you. We always appreciate your insight. How long have you been on the beat?
2011, I think, was my first year full time. I was doing some peripheral stuff popping in every once in a while for 4 or 5 years before that, but full time since 2011.
So almost a decade, roughly or so, of covering the NFL.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, good. All right, you know, we know that the National Football League is a different animal when it comes to the way salaries are handled. The NFLPA generally does not negotiate, as part of their collective bargaining agreements, guaranteed salaries for players, because the NFL, being such a different type of sport and where injuries can, ruin somebody's career so much more easily, they can't promise $100 million to somebody who then breaks a leg and, oh, I got to pay him, even though his career is over. So the NBA is a different type of thing. At Major League Baseball, they have guaranteed contracts. And That has kind of led to perhaps the most controversial comments in this big ESPN the magazine feature on the brothers Bennett, Martellus and Michael Bennett. Michael, of course, the outstanding defensive end with the Seahawks, and Martellus now going to be working with this New England Patriots after being with the Bears the last 3 years. They're talking about the salaries, and they're talking about how the NBA has so much more. And we just watched this too in the offseason, Justin, in the free agent period. We had NBA players who are just, you know, I mean, just players, not stars, just players making so much more money than even some NFL stars are able to make. And they're all guaranteed, which led Martellus Bennett to point out this. He said, do you know what the NFL stands for? Asking the writer at ESPN, the magazine. And his own answer to his own question was, in words, for lease. And they went on to talk about the impact of race on the National Football League and how it is that white owners, because there are no black owners, make so much more money than the players, the predominant number of which are black. Let's just start there and give me your thoughts on the salary structure, the way the NFL is. Is there something they can do or something that they should do to make contracts guaranteed in a very, very violent physical sport in which players aren't guaranteed to be around?
You know, I just don't know. You know, the difference between NBA and the NFL is NBA has a much longer season, much longer time to generate revenue, and there's far fewer players on that roster. Also, the top stars, their price is capped. So the salary cap for the NFL and the NBA aren't all that different. You know, I mean, I think the NBA is still smaller. I haven't looked at what the ceiling is now, but you also don't have to roster 65 guys for the course of a season, plus replacing any injured guys. So, you know, by the end of the season, you probably are paying 75 to 80 players, for, you know, what amounts to 10 home games, and that includes two preseason games. So it's really difficult to say NFL players should be paid more. The guaranteed salary part is the tricky part. I think what I'd like to see with the NFL is maybe a narrowing of the haves and have nots in terms of the highest paid players and the lowest paid players. You know, you get concerned about some of these minimum deals at the bottom. Listen, $450,000 is nothing to cry about, but you know, after taxes and after agent fees and union dues and all that stuff, you know, maybe they're coming home with $300,000, and these guys at the bottom of the roster, nothing is guaranteed. You know, often beyond one season, you say the average career in the NFL is 2.5, 3 years. Then what? You know, then what do these guys do? So they've made $600,000, $700,000 of bankable income for their life. It's not going to be enough. Not going to be enough. So,
let's explore that a little bit, because, you know, because you caught me when you said for their life. If they're only playing 2.5, 3 years, which is the average, I think the average NFL contract, or excuse me, career is a little longer. It's like 3.5, the last I had read. But let's just say 3. We'll put it in the middle of 3. If you come out of college at 22, that means you're 25 and you've already got $600K in the bank. And if your career is over and now it's time to move into the next phase of your career, the way all, you know, many of us do, moving from one career to another or one job to another, you still have another 40 years of interest, or excuse me, of income earning potential here. And you have, even in the worst case scenario, like you're talking about, say $200,000 of net bankable income over 3 years of football. I would love to have had that head start when I was 25 going into the rest of my work life, wouldn't you?
Sure. But the thing about football, and maybe more so than any other sport, is it demands all of your time. It demands all of your time in college. It demands all of your time in high school. And unfortunately, a lot of these guys don't develop the necessary skill because they're so focused on making it into the league. And it's not everybody. There are guys that come out, guys like Laken Tomlinson, the Lions guard, who, you know, have a degree from Duke and are kind of lined up after their work. But a lot of these guys, you know, they're in the NFL. They only went to college because they played football. You know, that was their path there. And, you know, they don't have the most marketable degree. They come out with a telecommunications degree or a kinesiology degree. And
most of them don't come out with a degree at all, to be quite frank. If we look at the numbers,
yeah,
you know, most of them don't graduate. Most of the scholarship athletes that go in, because they are counting on, as you say, making it to the NFL. They're not going to classes, or if they are, it's just enough to stay eligible under NCAA standards, and that's the extent of it.
Right, and if they weren't playing football, then they wouldn't go to college at all. So I don't know if there's a big difference if we're going to victimize them because of the game of football, but You know, these guys come out of college without a lot of marketable talents beyond their skills on the football field. So yeah, they're 25 and I'd say they've made $600,000, but you got to pay for a living. And I'm not saying you got to go out and buy a Lamborghini, but you got to have a car. You got to have, a house or an apartment. And, you know,
but as does every other college graduate who's starting at $40,000 a year and not $200,000 a year of net income for the first 3 years. See, that's kind of the thing. What really kind of got my wheels inside my head turning as far as wondering what exactly it is that they hope to do for the players. And I'm talking about the Bennett brothers, and I'm talking about whoever wrote the article for the ESPN. I don't even read the byline. It doesn't even matter. But they're talking about sympathizing with players. For example, Michael and Martellus have made $20 million, over $20 million playing football each, and they're dissatisfied with this system. And I ask, if you had not gone to college at all, because maybe you weren't as big as you are, and would you have gone to college, first of all? Second of all, if you had or you had not, graduating with just a high school diploma or a college degree, are you going to make $20 million anywhere? And I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb here and say they would be like you and me and say, no, we're not making $20 million over 4 or 5 years of any work whatsoever. How can they complain and call that exploitative of players?
No, I mean, I don't sympathize necessarily with the Bennetts. Who I sympathize with is the bottom of the roster guy who's getting churned out and signing for a game and then getting spit back out in the league and, you know, maybe ends up suffering a violent concussion or rips his ACL and never plays football again and has medical issues for the rest of his life and never even reached that, because you don't get pension in the NFL. You don't get insurance and medical benefits until you've been in the league for 4 years.
Right.
And yeah, you mentioned the 3.5 years. Well, guess what? That 3.5 years is, it's influenced by guys like Tom Brady and Jason Hansen that play for 10, 12, 15 years at positions. You know, it's probably closer to 2.5 for a lot of those bottom of the roster linebackers and, you know, offensive linemen. And so, yeah, it's the life they chose, but you wish that at some point, you know, whether it was in the early stages of their NFL career and preferably in the early stages of their college career, it was pressed upon them life skills. You know, to take advantage of the education that you're getting, to beyond that, the common sense of the world. You know, I don't know how I would have handled getting $600,000 as a 22-year-old individual. I'm guessing I probably wouldn't have handled it very well. You don't understand how to manage your money at that age, especially if you've come from, you know, nothing. If you've come from nothing and you've never had money and your family's never had money, and then you got all your friends and your mom and your dad and your aunts and your uncles, and you're trying to share that wealth and give back, well, it's gone. It's gone. Most players are broke.
But you know, the problem with that, we're talking to Justin Rogers, who, of course, covers the Lions and the NFL for the Detroit News, does an outstanding job there and an outstanding job every time we talk as well here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. The problem with that kind of thinking for me, Justin, is, you know, that's not the NFL's job. You know, and even though it isn't, they try to make it their job. They hold those rookie symposiums, and they spend hours and hours talking about, A, how to conduct yourself so you don't get in trouble, because you're going to be a target. You're going to have all kinds of people targeting you on the road. Guys may try to bait you into a fight so they can get you to punch them and get a payday. Girls might try to bait you into their hotel room or your hotel room so that they can get a baby daddy payday. They go through all of those things, and they also go through the, you're going to be tempted to go and buy the Bentley. You're going to be tempted to go and buy the most expensive mansion in the world and do all of these things to try to keep up with the other well-paid players in the league. So they try to educate these guys, but at the end of the day, you know, they got people who go to work for Apple, the programmers, the software writers, the code writers, the ones who are really, really good, and they make that company billions of dollars. They're not getting advice from, you know, from the CEO of Apple on how to go and spend their money. What they do with it is up to them, and how long they stay in it is up to them. It's not the employer's job to tell you how to spend your paycheck.
But again, I mean, those people you're talking about, they were always destined to go to college. They probably came up through better upbringing in terms of learning the value of money early. You know, you take the guy that comes out of the rough neighborhood of Memphis or you know, somewhere in rural Alabama, and he goes and he gets his rookie deal and he gets that signing bonus of $700,000, which seems just like a windfall. Well, what's the first thing he wants to do? Well, he wants to buy his mom a house, and maybe he just buys her a modest house. Maybe he buys her a $150,000 home and gets her out of the bad area or whatever. Well, you know, after taxes and that, and you know, most of the money's gone, and then he suffers the injury. Well, you know, career's over. There's no more money coming in. You have no marketable skills from college because you came out, you just spent your entire college career just playing football. I don't know if you read the Denard Robinson piece where somebody followed him around for a week and they couldn't believe what his schedule was like and what was demanded of him as the quarterback of Michigan. Listen, the quarterback of Michigan isn't the linebacker at South Florida, but he was doing 80, 90 hours a week of football in school. You know, there's no time for personal development. So once football leaves them, they've got nothing.
And again, though, I would still say they've got something. They've got hundreds of thousands of dollars that nobody else has to start and figure out where they're going from there. Let's take your guy from Memphis that you just talked about. Because for every guy coming up, growing up in a broken home in Memphis, when I say broken, I mean impoverished, maybe only one parent there, the kind of things that you're talking about, the one who wants to buy mom a house and everything else. For every one of those that is big, fast, and strong enough to go and make it to the NFL, even if college isn't their thing because they're not great students, but they make it to the NFL. For every one of them, there are 10,000 who can't go to the NFL because they're not big and fast and strong enough, and they go into the service. College doesn't work for them. They can't work on $10 an hour and be able to survive and handle all the things they need. So they go to the military. And these guys are going in there with far, far, far more risk to their bodies than even an NFL player does. And you know what they're making? They're making, you know, $18,000 a year working in the military. And they're not buying mom a house. They don't have any more marketable skills than anybody else does, and they're putting their bodies on the line. It's hard for fans like me and maybe you and maybe other people to listen to the Bennetts and others who back them say, well, you know, these guys are putting their bodies on the line for rich owners who are taking advantage of them by paying them those several hundred thousands of dollars in the lower-end cases you're talking about to the tens of millions of dollars in the high-end cases. Go tell that to the guy who came out of high school and couldn't go to the NFL and ended up going into the Marines.
Well, I think the military might be the worst example, and clearly this discussion might go off the rails, but I'm not degrading the military in any way. But you go into the military, your housing is taken care of, your food is taken care of. You talk about the NFL not being responsible for nurturing you as an adult. That's exactly what the military does. The military tells you where to be every minute of every day when you're an active member. You have very little free time. Everything's controlled.
You're right. It might go off the rails at that. You're telling me because they provide them barracks and three hot meals and a cot that's a better lifestyle than an NFL player going, and even if they get a minimum rookie contract, getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in signing bonuses and so on, you're telling me that the Marines and those in the military have it easier?
No, but I'm telling you that their values of everything are instilled in them. They have somebody that is like maybe not a parental figure, but every element of their life.
The Marines, because they don't have any values instilled in them. They didn't have any guiding lights. They didn't have any parents guiding them on. Because if they did, they would have gotten educations in high school and maybe made themselves college material. So many people go to the Marines because it is the only other option. And again, when we're talking about physical risk, because that's what some of the conversation about Michael and Martellus Bennett's comments are. They say they're exploiting these players, the owners are, and putting their bodies at risk for their own benefit. Again, an NFL player's risk is nothing compared to somebody who actually wears the uniform and ends up in the middle of a firefight in a foreign country. These guys got to go out there and go through far harder training than an NFL player does at a training camp, which is called basic training. And again, they're doing it for $16,000, $18,000 a year. I don't see anybody crying for them, and yet we're supposed to feel badly for the NFL player who only makes it into the league for 2.5 years and then has to go find something else to do.
And I don't like where this discussion's gone. I mean,
Just so you know, Justin, the reason I went to the military because we're just talking about choices. You know, you can choose if you're an 18-year-old, you can choose. Do I want to go to college and try to make it to the NFL if I happen to have that size, speed, strength, etc., which is something that may chew me up and spit me out that I'm going to have to put myself on the line for physically, which may hurt me. I may break my neck. I may get a concussion, as you pointed out before. I'm going to make that choice with the end goal being of millions of dollars if I make it. Well, you can choose to go into the military where you more than a concussion might happen. You get your head cut off, for crying out loud, and it's going to be peanuts. People make choices. I don't feel badly for anybody who goes into the military for making that choice, and I'm not going to feel badly for somebody who chooses to pursue NFL riches if they happen to not get as rich as they want to be before they're done. I guess that's what the reason I brought it up.
No, and I agree with you. I think the bottom line is that many players in the NFL, and not all, but many players in the NFL are following the path that is laid out before them, because that's the opportunity they have. A lot of these people don't have the opportunity to be lawyers or doctors. It's just not carved out the same way for them that maybe you or I had those opportunities coming from suburbia. So,
well, and conversely, a lot of lawyers and doctors don't have the opportunity to go play in the NFL, where you make a lot more than lawyers and doctors do, because they're not born 6'5 and 225 with a 4'4, you know, 40.
Yeah, but lawyers and doctors also don't have to worry about a 2.5-year career and being spit out because of injury and having no career after that in the field that they love and they are an expert at.
Understood. But I guess the point being, they have to work extraordinarily hard to get where they are, to, you know, in terms of the white-collar folks you're talking about and lawyers and doctors, et cetera, et cetera. Just like the athlete has to work extraordinarily hard to get where they are. But the point being, whatever your career path lays out for you, it is your choice. You can choose to say, you know what, yeah, I'm 6'5 and 225, but I'm not just going to go to basket weaving class or get my degree in kinesiology because I might blow out a knee and never make it to the league. I'm going to take advantage of my free education. That choice is up to the student. That choice is up to the individual. To throw this at the NFL and saying you're not doing, and that's where this whole thing started, for those who are wondering what the heck you and I are talking about. The Bennett brothers are basically blaming the NFL and the NFL Players Association for not doing enough for the players themselves. Those are decisions that the players, each individual, has to make if they go into the league, if they go into the service, or if they go to law school.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about decision-making, adult decision-making for 16- and 17-year-old kids that have never had anything. You know, I don't have that high of expectations of expecting a 17-year-old going into college to be making the best decisions for his life when the football coach has already got their claws into him, demanding everything of them all their time, all their personal time. So many of those guys can't even take the classes they want because it doesn't fit within the football schedule. That's just... that's a whole nother debate. I mean, that's something talking about the way NCAA treats athletes, and we can get into that another day. But, you know, we took completely different things away from the Bennett article. I was way more focused on, NFL stifling personalities of players, and, you know, that spills out from not just management to fans. And I thought that was the most intriguing part of the piece to me.
Yeah, and to me, because I don't see it as being stifled. I mean, is anybody telling these guys to shut up? Did the coaches, did the league, did Roger Goodell say, hey, don't speak on these kinds of things? I mean, they're free to be their own personalities. I was taking away the content, and the content for me is this suggestion that the league is trying to intentionally keep players down, and according to Martellus Bennett, by race, that white owners, because there are no black owners, are trying to intentionally keep black players down and not give them as much money as they give black players in some of the other leagues. To me, it was a real strong social content that was the draw of the article. These guys are complaining about the way they're treated for a couple of guys who have made over $20 million, as they both acknowledged in the piece, in their careers thus far, and they are still going and making great, great money in the process.
Yeah, I can try, but I can't empathize with the Bennetts. I can't on that angle. I'm white. I'm from suburbia. I never had it rough. I grew up in a mostly white community. I don't know their emotions and their feelings on the topic, and I won't ever be able to feel it. I know them, but I will never be able to fully sympathize and empathize with them, no matter how hard I try, because I'll never go through that. But in terms of being silenced, you know, and taking away the race out of it, absolutely. As somebody in that locker room, if you are not a star player, you cannot say anything, because anything that is remotely out of context, quirky in any way, you are a threat to the image of the team, to the team camaraderie. And yeah, those guys are told from day one not to say anything. And look at the sports cliches, and look how much worse sports cliches have become over the years, because everyone is afraid to say anything. So I look at the Bennetts from that perspective, beyond the race, as a breath of fresh air that they're willing to say anything. I've spoken to both Bennetts at some level, whether it was a conference call or after a post game, and they're just a joy to be around. And yeah, they can be goofy and outlandish, but there's just so few personalities in NFL locker room that I welcome something like that.
Yeah, and to me, that's another discussion. I was more talking about the content rather than the fact that they're allowed or not allowed to say stuff. I'm talking more about the money and the exploitation factor of players. So you're right. You know, read the same article and you get two different, you know, points of view out of it. And that's just fine, Justin. We appreciate that. Hey, I know we're late, but before we go, any big news out of camp today? Anybody we need to know about? Is Matthew Stafford still ticked off that everybody's playing Pokemon Go? Any injuries? Anything we need to know?
Yeah, I don't know the status of what Pokemon, which players have caught at this point. The only injury of note right now, beyond the DeAndre Levy, obviously, is Theo Riddick's banged up. He's missed the last two practices. He was walking with pretty noticeable limp. Nobody seems too concerned about either one of those players, so we'll continue to play it by ear. I expect both back at some point during the preseason.
All right, we can live with that. Good stuff. Hey, Justin, thanks for your opinions on this. That's why we bring you on. I know you've always got deep thoughts, no matter what they are. They're appreciated and welcome, and thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Got it. Justin Rogers, Detroit News. All right, we've got to get a timeout here for Top of the Hour Sports Center. We're going to talk to Dennis Manilov on the other side, get his perspective on all of these things, see what he took away from that article and the Bennett's. And then, of course, we want your thoughts, too, at 866-240-1065 right here on The Ticket.
Something in my elbow. I don't know what it is. It's been there. It's kind of like the reason why I didn't throw, you know, when I went to San Diego. We took a little break after that and see, but now, you know, it's been there for a while, and now it's just getting worse.
Swinging a ground ball. Fair down the third baseline. Pass to diving Frazier. Into the corner, and that'll score Ian Kinsler. Maven around second, heading to third, and he will make it easily. Triple into the left field corner for Cameron Maven gives the Tigers a 2-1 lead in the fifth. Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a 2-run shot to right, his 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The 3-1. Fly ball, right field, deep. Way back and gone. Victor Martinez, number 18. 3-1, swinging a ground ball to second base.
Whoa.
Nice big hop for Kinsler. Hit it hard, but Kinsler gloves it, fields, and flips. And the Tigers make it 7 straight wins.
The Bennett brothers, and they believe that the players don't have enough power in the league, that the contracts are short, they're not guaranteed, and they pale in comparison to the NBA. He said, quote, do you know what the NFL stands for? N-word for lease.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, that's not too controversial, is it? Welcome as we begin hour number two. It's 12 minutes past. Thanks so much for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Great commentary from Justin Rogers, who came at things from a very, very different place than I did. When reading the Martellus brothers' comments, specifically the parts about, a lot of it was very funny in that ESPN The Magazine article, talking about Jay Cutler, talking about Brock Osweiler and many other players. I mean, these guys are hilarious. They're both extraordinarily intelligent, obviously. They're very deeply thought. In fact, let me play this for you after I read this clip and then we bring in Dennis. Again, just for those who are just joining us, ESPN The Magazine did a big feature on the brothers Bennett, Michael of the Seahawks, Martellus now of the Patriots. They are blunt, and this is quoting the article, about their shared belief that they're underpaid. Michael, playing on one of the most team-friendly contracts in the league, has been trying to persuade the Seahawks to rework his deal. But when you talk about wealth and NFL salaries, it's clear they're less concerned with money than power. If you're a player, the only thing you own is your likeness, and your likeness has a date on it, Michael says. The only way we can be sustainable is to make our own companies. Martellus points out that football contracts, which are shorter and non-guaranteed, pale in comparison to NBA deals that are handed out. He said, and you heard Molly there, do you know what the NFL stands for? It stands for N-words for lease. And if you look at the number of spaces they allowed for his quote in the N-word, it would be the N-word that ends in R, not the one that ends in A. That's pretty controversial. The article goes on to say it might be hard to sympathize with this idea, the notion that a pair of brothers who have made more than $20 million each playing football could be dissatisfied with the system that's enriched them. But consider, Michael and Martellus were raised by a good man who lost his job because of the bad actors above him, and that's a different part of the story about their father. It has nothing to do with the NFL. They have seen hundreds of players rise and fall with little to show for it, while the suits who profit off their bodies, meaning the owners, stay in the same place. They know what it means to be labor instead of capital. Growing up, black people never owned anything. Martellus said, I want to build and I want to make. He asked his brother Michael, how many black owners have there been in the history of the NFL? Zero, Michael says. We're check getters, not check writers. And as I bring Dennis Manilov into the conversation, I want to play a little bit of the response to some of that by Ryan Clark, who was on that program this morning on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. And Ryan Clark, the safety who used to be a player's representative in the union to the NFLPA for the Steelers, Ryan Clark was speaking about the brothers Bennett, and he said they say nothing by chance. They don't speak off the cuff. They plan everything that they say, and they're deeply thought out about.
Well, the first thing, let's speak about the brothers. If you've met them, if you've talked to them, there's nothing they say that isn't calculated. There's nothing that they say that they haven't had an intelligent opinion on. So that's the first thing. These are not words they're just throwing out, or Martellus is throwing out at this time. Michael Bennett came along in the NFLPA as I was kind of ushering out right before I started to retire. He was always in the meeting talking about ways to monetize the player, ways for the players to make more money off of their likenesses. And if you continue to read through this, you say, okay, this is what they're talking about. How many black owners do we have? How many players are able to profit off of who they are, the way the league is making money? Initially, though, when you hear in words for hire or for lease, the first thing I think is, well, wait, everybody in the league has the same contracts. Everybody in the NFL. So it's not necessarily, to me at first, it wasn't a black thing. But as you read on, he's saying, hey, the black players who make up most of this league don't get to make money off of who they are. It's not about the player in the NFL. It's about the shield.
And the problem with what Martellus Bennett said there, he did make it about black players versus white players. He did make it about black players versus actually white owners. And that is where the conversation really, really took a very interesting turn. Let's bring Dennis Maniloff in. He's been covering the Cleveland Browns. He's been covering all Cleveland sports, in fact, for many, many years. He also is the author of an outstanding book called From A to Z, Andrews to Zastadil, Dennis Maniloff's favorite Plain Dealer sports interviews. Dennis, thanks for the time this afternoon. How are you, sir?
Thanks for having me, Bob.
All right. You heard most of what I quoted from Martellus and Michael Bennett in ESPN, the magazine's article, and then you heard a little bit of response there from Ryan Clark about this. I'm going to play for you in a little bit something from one of the other debaters on that program, Dennis, that really set me off the rails. But what is your overall response to the argument that the NFL players don't make nearly as much as the other players in the other sports, and thus they are being exploited by NFL owners, particularly black players being exploited by the NFL's white owners?
First of all, I'm sick of the Bennett brothers already, okay? I'm sick of hearing how intelligent they are, how wonderful and bright they are. You know, I've always been taught, be wary of people who tell you how smart they are, okay? There's so many things, you know, wrong with what they're saying, in my opinion, of course. If you don't like the NFL, then quit. Nobody's stopping you from quitting this awful business of exploitation. Get out of there. I mean, I got news for the Bennett brothers. You don't have a platform like you do if you're not in the NFL. If you're not playing for this oppressive league that kills you and exploits you and does all these horrible things to you. You don't have that platform if you're not in the league. If you don't like it, quit. I mean,
wow.
You know, that's for starters.
I should have had you on our last segment.
Well, it's ridiculous.
No, Dennis,
you know,
Dennis, hold on.
Bob,
hold on.
I'm not saying there aren't problems with the NFL. There aren't problems with the NBA, MLB, you name it. There's problems at any place of business, okay? But this idea that in a free country, with an option to decline employment, nobody's forcing the Bennett brothers to play that awful game called football and make millions of dollars doing it. Nobody's forcing them to do it.
Get out of there. I am so glad I had you on. I wish I would have had you on one segment earlier, because I just did a segment with Justin Rogers, who's a beat writer covering the Lions up there for the Detroit News, who had a very, very different viewpoint than yours. And I can tell you, my viewpoint is much more in line with yours, and I want to enforce that or reinforce that a little bit more by playing this little clip for you. And I don't know how much you watch some of the ESPN programming or listen to the radio, but this is ESPN Television on First Take with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. This was Max Kellerman's response to the brothers Bennett, particularly Martellus Bennett, and his argument about About exploitation, about N-words for lease, et cetera, et cetera. Listen to this.
What is also true is that football's exploitation on this level. What we're
actually, hold on a second. That's not the one that I want to wanted you to hear. I want to hear, want you to hear, for goodness sakes, do I have the right one? Let me try this one.
If you look at the content of what was said, it's uncontroversial. That's an uncontroversial comment in terms of the content. Has there been a history in this country of exploiting African-American labor? Duh. I mean, like, this is not news. That's uncontroversial. And football, whether we like it or not, I know it takes kids off the street and it gives focus and it teaches the various values that we like very much, et cetera, structures time. This goes for white players, too, obviously. I mean, there are rich white kids playing quarterbacks, right. Quarterback, and the dads are paying a lot of money for them to do it. What is also true is that football's exploitation on this level. What we're asking these players to do with their bodies is exploitative. And so it is a continuation in certain respects of rich white guys, by rich white guys, of African-American labor. I don't think that is a, well, they're making millions and yada, yada. Yes, they are. They're paid well for the labor, but it doesn't mean it's not exploiting what they're doing at a real physical cost.
That was Max Kellerman's response to this story this morning, and it's one.
Just more nonsense.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I called it worse than that. But go ahead.
Well, it's more nonsense, and I've liked Max Kellerman. I just prefer to absolutely 100% disagree with him here. The key to everything is the ability to freely remove yourself from this exploitation. Okay, that's what we're dealing with here. You can.
But
every single member.
Not just that. He glossed over the multi-million-dollar part. He said, but they're making millions.
Yeah.
How is it exploitative to pay somebody tens of millions of dollars, in the cases of these guys, to go out there and put their bodies on the line when, and that's what they're doing. We understand that there's a huge physical cost there. But how is that exploitative, again, and I used this with my last guest, Dennis, and he didn't really like it very much, compared to other guys who put their bodies on the line much, much more so than they do for $18,000 a year. And I'm talking about the high school or college graduate who goes into the military.
And don't forget about the pensions, too, okay, that the NFL players get. You know, there are plenty of players are paid well after they retire, all right, in very lock-solid pensions. Unfortunately, we know about the infamous O.J. situation where, you know, he was so proud that the Goldens couldn't get his money because he was getting an NFL pension. So, look, I'm not saying that there aren't wrongs in the NFL the way it's set up. I'm not saying that guys with concussions are not a serious issue. But the point of the whole deal is you don't have to be exploited. Just get out of there. If it's so horrible, leave. Go find some other thing to do. Apparently, the Bennetts are so intelligent, they should be able to find employment at a million different places. Why do they have to choose tackle football?
And that's the other part of this, Dennis. That's the other part of this. Even if you are, and we talked about this earlier, again, my other guest and I, if you're one of the few that actually, and by and large, I mean, let's be honest, an enormous number of Division I college football players do not graduate. And they're only college football players because they have a goal of making it to the NFL. And so they don't go to classes, or maybe they weren't college material in the first place, but they're not going to have opportunities. But even if you are one of the really, really intelligent ones, and let's say you get a degree, and let's say you go get a great job in the real work world outside of the multi-million dollar NFL lifestyle, even if you ascend to the position of CEO of some company, you're still not going to make $20 million in 4 years the way somebody like Michael Bennett has made, or Martellus Bennett has made. So these guys are complaining about the only thing in the world that they'll ever be able to do to earn the kind of money that they are.
I urge these the Bennetts and anyone else to go back to the origins of professional sports. I got news for you. They weren't getting paid, all right? Or if they were getting paid, it was meal money. No one says that you have to pay major money to play a professional sport. It just happens to be that way. But it's not etched in the fabric that in order to have a professional league, you must get paid gazillion dollars. So overall,
well, their argument to that, Dennis, and this is where it's important. We're talking to Dennis Manilow, by the way, tremendous sports writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, author of From A to Z, Andrus Disastadil. Their argument is the NFL's owners are making so much money because of the TV deals, et cetera, et cetera. They're
here
making
they
so much money that, and again, they point out the racial aspect of this, that there have never been any black owners, as if somehow there was a black ball, if you will, that they used to keep African-Americans from owning teams. That's not the case, obviously. If you have the money to buy, if the St. Louis Rams are up for sale and an African-American comes up and says, yeah, I've got the, you know, the $1.3 billion it's going to take to do that, they're going to say, welcome to the club. We want your money in our pool here. But at any rate, they're saying that a bunch of white owners are making hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, off the backs of these players. And that's the part of this that that is the most bothersome to me. Again, they're doing this because these players are making their own tens of millions, but they're saying they want owner type money. They want more of the pie, if you will, that is generated by the NFL to go to them instead of, you know, what goes to the owners who hung out their own shingles and bought their own businesses and took their own risks with their own capital.
Well, how about the Bennett start by taking a more active role in the NFLPA? In the structures with their respective teams. Why don't you get in on every single meeting and do everything you can to affect change? But listen, I would never accuse the Bennett brothers of being racist, okay? But why would you say something that's racist on its face when you talk about, you know, N-word for lease? Because isn't that an insinuation that while N-word for lease is in play, everybody else is not for lease, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I'll go further than you because I think what their statement was very, very racist because of A, using the N-word, implying that N-words, and in using their vernacular here, are treated differently than white players are in their, you know, in their mind. That in and of itself is a very, very blatantly racist statement. But then when you throw the white owner part into it, and you hear a guy like Kellerman saying, you know, this is just a continuation of what's always gone on in America, black labor being exploited by white ownership. That's what they're alleging here. Well, and I think there is a strong racial and racist undertone to
that. You know, Bob, here you go. Here it is. If I'm the Bennett brothers and I'm so upset with the way things are, what I do is I use my platform to get every single black player in the NFL to walk out. Get everybody to walk out. You want to take money out of the owners' pockets? You want to shut the white NFL owners down? Stop working.
Do you think they would ever be successful in doing that? Considering there are so many, my point is there are so many black football players, like white football players, who are perfectly happy with their jobs and perfectly happy with the amount of money they're making and perfectly happy with the opportunity to do what God gave them the talent to do instead of having to work in a factory over on the assembly line for 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day or to work in, you know, an office building at a desk answering the phone or punching numbers on a computer or whatever other opportunities are out there. That's the point. You know, they're making this statement on behalf of black players in a larger sense, but what they believe, I don't think is something that the vast majority of black players would say is true.
That's my point. That's why I made this silly statement, get them all to quit, because they're not going to all quit, because they don't agree with the Bennetts, and they don't feel like they're being exploited, and they don't feel like life is so terrible that they're putting money in the white owners' pockets, okay? So, you know, great. I'm glad the Bennetts have their opinions. That's great, all right? It's wonderful that it's a free country. You can express your views. Marvelous. But that doesn't mean you all have to say, oh, boy, the Bennetts, boy. I'll tell you what, they're so smart. Man, I agree with them on all levels. No, you don't have to agree with them. And well, you know what? As you said, probably the majority of the black players in the NFL disagree with them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be playing.
I would say just the majority of players, period, black or white, which is why it's so bizarre to me and very unsettling, to be honest, that they turned it into a racial issue. And here's the other thing. The NFLPA, the current players, the CBA, the current collective bargaining agreement negotiated by the NFL Players Association and the owners, calls for a split that's almost 50-50. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 48.5% of revenue that the players get. Okay? That's pretty doggone good, again, considering the fact that the owners are the ones who incur all of the costs. If they start to not sell out games, if they start to not sell merchandise, if their the value of their franchise starts to go down, they're the ones who take the hit financially. If they're forced to sell because they start losing money, they're the ones who lose how much they put into that into that venture when they started. So the fact that it's near 50% is already, in my opinion, extraordinarily positive for the Players Association. But to listen to the Bennetts, Dennis, to listen to them tell it that they're being kept down because the league is majority. The majority of African Americans, as if all of the black players did walk out and we had in the league entirely of white players, suddenly the owners would say, well, now this is a little bit better. We'll increase the share to 70% of the revenue for you guys.
Hey,
That's the suggestion they're telling, and it's not the case.
That's correct. That's the insinuation. By saying N-word for lease, you're insinuating that if the blacks were removed from that equation and were replaced by all whites or all Hispanics or all Asians, that somehow the exploitation that is the NFL would decrease dramatically, and all of a sudden the league would no longer be exploiting dollars to the players.
They'd be given
which
better
is a
contracts.
Bunch of, yeah.
Yeah, they'd
That's
be given better contracts, longer contracts, guaranteed contracts, as if the owners are in this for anything other than what they are, which is money. You
exactly.
buy a business to make money. If I buy a shoe store and open it up in downtown Toledo or in downtown Finley, I want to make money at it. If I buy a professional football team, I want to make money at it. And that means I control my costs and I try to increase my revenue, increase my profit. That's the reason they're there. And if they think that they're somehow gonna be willing to lose more of their profit just because now we have a more favorable split of racial diversity on our teams, now we got all white guys here, I'll be willing to give money away as long as I'm giving it to white guys, but I'll be darned if I'm going to give it to those African American players. That it's just so insulting, Dennis. It's very hard to look.
Yeah, there are no black millionaires in the NFL. None.
Right. Apparently there are no black billionaires in the world because none of them have ever bought an NFL team. And that was the other thing they said. There have never been any black owners. Why is that? Is it because there is some sort of a rule that says they can't, or maybe it's because there hasn't been an African American billionaire? You have to be, right? I mean, you got to be a billionaire to buy a pro sports franchise. Not even a 100 millionaire. You got to be a billionaire, probably a couple of times over, right? Like Jimmy Haslam when he bought the Cleveland Browns. If you have that kind of money and you say, I want to buy this franchise, do they honestly think, talking about the Bennett brothers and those who support them, that the owners would say, no, we don't want your money, we don't want you to be a part of our club?
Exactly. And here's the other thing. Hey, Bennett brothers, if you're so bad, go work in the so-called real world, or go work in the private sector. Guess what? You're going to be working for owners, no matter what color, no matter what creed, who are going to be looking to do what, Bob? Make money.
Exactly.
All right? You work for a company for an ownership that wants to make money, that's beholden to shareholders. I work for a company, an ownership that wants to make money. I don't, whether they're black, white, green, yellow, it doesn't matter. They want to make money. So you're going to be working for any ownership that wants to make money. Unless it's a nonprofit or volunteer base, so your so-called exploitation is going to be in play no matter where you go.
Yeah, I would say this to Dennis too, just to kind of bring it home, because guys like you and me and everybody listening to us right now, blue collar guy, well, not blue collar. I mean, I work behind a microphone. I don't have an axe in my hand. What I mean is, middle income guys, middle income people like you and me. You've got a job. Do you make enough money at your job, Dennis? You wish you had a raise?
Sure, I wish I had a raise, yes.
We all do. If it got so bad,
I'm lucky to be employed.
Thank you. That's my point. Same with me. If it got so bad and you just felt like I deserve so much more, I am generating so much more revenue for this company than they're paying me, I need that raise because it's just not right. If you felt strongly enough, you'd walk and you'd go to another job. And it's exactly the advice you gave them at the beginning of this interview. If it is so bad, go find. I know I do. Are you happy with all the rules of your company and the things that they require you to do? Probably not. Because I'm not. Nobody's happy with every rule of the employer that pays your check, that signs your check. Nobody is really happy with all of those things. But you deal with it and you decide, how much can I take? How much can I stand? How much can I put up with for the amount of money I make to make this worth my time and effort? And if I think it is worth my time and effort, I stay. And if I don't, that's when it's time to go find a new job. It should not be any different for them and their multi-million dollar contracts than it is for you and me and our very average middle income, middle America contracts.
Correct. You couldn't have said it better.
Dennis, last thing before you go, I did it to Justin Rogers. I'll do it to you. Give me an update on the Browns. You following them at camp? Tell us anything you want to tell us. How close are we to getting Robert Griffin named the actual starter? I know it's going to happen. I talked to Petrak yesterday. Josh Gordon, is he still out with the quad? Just anything you can tell us about camp.
Yeah, Griffin, it's only a matter of days, perhaps, but it certainly he'll be the starter, barring something shocking. Gordon's still quad, is eligible to practice as soon as he gets over the quad. I'm keeping an eye on camp while I'm watching the Indians. I'm excited about Hugh Jackson and everything. Terrell Pryor has got my attention. It sounds from the reports that you read in here that Pryor's making progress as a receiver. So he's one of the guys that's fascinating me.
Yeah, I was talking to him about him a little bit yesterday, too, to Petrak, and he's got a lot of people opening their eyes saying, wow, a lot of development, a lot of, you know, the evolution of the change from quarterback to receiver happened in that offseason. Now, we don't know for sure until they start playing games for real if he can handle that with defensive guys trying to take him out and making catches in traffic and that sort of thing. But obviously the preseason is right around the corner, and we will indeed find out. D-Man, thanks for your insight and analysis. We always appreciate it, no matter what your thoughts are. We appreciate them, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Dennis Manilov, very, very different point of view, I think, on this whole thing than we got from Justin Rogers. I don't think they could be more polar opposite. Justin seemed very sympathetic to the Bennett's point and their plight and the plight of players who don't make it big in the NFL to make, you know, tens of millions of dollars, the ones who get chewed up and spit out after 2.5 years. And Dennis's point is, if you don't like it, quit. If you don't think it's the right place for you, if you don't think you're being paid enough, you think you're being exploited, go work for somebody who won't exploit you. Go find another job and quit. And I got to tell you, that's the side of the aisle I fall on in that discussion. All right. You've heard Justin Rogers. You heard from Dennis Manilov. You've heard me. Haven't heard much from Kush, and that's okay. We will. And I want to hear from you. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. The last half hour of the program is yours right after SportsCenter. Coming up next on The Ticket.
I've The Ticket.
Oh, my goodness. It's already 4:42. Only 18 minutes of outstanding awesomeness left in the extravaganza today. We'll try to fill it with some good stuff for you. I don't know how much of that is going to come from me. Maybe it needs to come from you. 866-240-1065 is the number. What are your thoughts on this? Do you empathize? Do you sympathize? Do you feel badly for anybody in the National Football League complaining about their salaries, considering the fact that they are indeed making millions and millions of dollars for doing something that 99% of the population could not do? And I know that certainly makes them exceptional, which is why they make that money. But you know what? There are a lot of things that 99% of the population that that they can do that perhaps these guys can't. We all have our spot. We all have our place. We all make our choices. Whether or not you want to be a part of that is up to you. Do you feel bad for them, particularly when they say they're being exploited by the owners because they're not making enough money, they don't have a big enough piece of the pie because there are no owners of color, all of those kinds of things? Or do you think that the Bennett brothers are way out of line here? I want to get your thoughts on it before we're done. If you can get in now, get in now at 866-240-1065. Meantime, Jim Cushlin, you didn't say anything. You heard Justin Rogers' points of view.
Right.
You heard Dennis Manilov's point of view. I love Dennis's very succinct. Hey, Bennett brothers, if you don't like it, if you're tired of being exploited by this employer, go find another one. Go get another job. Get out. Quit. Leave. And that's exactly what the freedom of the United States of America allows us all to do.
You know, well, what's interesting about this is this type of topic could have the grounds for an interesting debate about how the structures in the NFL work relative to Major League Baseball or the NBA, because there's all sorts of different angles. You know, the players union is kind of much weaker, I think we'd all admit, in the NFL than it is in, say, baseball or basketball. There's the average years playing. There's the non-guarantee. There's all sorts of interesting stuff.
I don't know if I would agree with that part about it being weaker. It's just different.
I think the NFL PA on a relative basis is weaker than the one in the NBA. On the grounds that, you know, they are able to negotiate. Like, do you really think that the NFL would ever concede to the players 50% of the revenue the way the NBA's did? Absolutely not. I don't ever see that happening.
I don't think they should ever have to, because I think what Justin Rogers pointed out is very, very accurate.
Yes.
When he pointed out that, you know, how many players do you have on your basketball team? You got 12 guys that you've got to play.
No, that's totally true. Excuse me. Yeah.
You know, and they're going to play 82 games. It's going to be a lot different, so we're going to have 82 different opportunities to generate more revenue each and every year, plus our TV contracts, local radio contracts, et cetera, et cetera. The NFL's got to pay 65 guys, for crying out loud.
Yeah. No,
plus
that's true.
Plus a whole heck of a lot bigger support staffs. A coaching staff in the NBA is, what, 4 guys? Coaching staff in the NFL is 15 guys, plus quality control, plus scouts beyond the imagination. I mean, the operation in the NFL is such an extraordinarily larger operation than any other major league
baseball
franchise. So that's Justin, who, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, kind of took their understanding and their side a little bit more than Dennis did. He even acknowledged, look, what do you expect these owners to do? They have an extraordinarily different responsibility than the owner of an NBA team. But go ahead.
No, and that's all true. And those are all good points. My point that I'm trying to say is that where we could have a fun sports conversation about how the systems, these different quirks in each of the sports work out, we can't. Because race had to get thrown into the whole thing.
That's a very big point about this. And they talked about that this morning, too, on First Take, where I first heard about the story and then read the article myself, that the N-word, when it gets thrown into this, completely, well, not completely, but almost completely invalidates any other valid points or content that they may have been trying to make. Because now you have distracted everybody by saying that this is a racial issue and not just a sports compensation issue.
I don't like the invalidate part of it, but certainly completely distract. We're not talking about what other any interesting points that they may have brought up about guaranteed salaries and, you know, Justin Rogers, another thing he pointed out, you know, with the whole pension thing in the NFL. Yeah, you got to get to that 3 years, and we know the average is about 2.5 to 3, so a lot of guys will never even get that.
Right.
But we can't have those conversations because race got thrown into the whole thing, and especially with everything that's been, you know, going on right now.
But to me, we kind of still did have the conversation, though, Jim, because I think the conversation would be the same. My conversation about a guy who only spends 2 years in the league would be the same conversation that I have with somebody who retired after 15 and made $100 million. And that is, did you choose to do this, or did you go there at the point of a gun? Did you choose to go and make, you know, the league minimum of $350,000 a year? I don't know what the league minimum is. Do you know what it is?
I got to look it up for exactly what it is. Hang on. Let me continue.
Okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't matter. The point was, did you choose to go and do that, and then knowing that you might get cut after your second year because you're a fringe player, you're not a first-round pick, you're a seventh-round pick, or you're a free agent signee, or you're a former first-round pick who got injured and wasn't able to make the team because you couldn't pass the physical the second year or the third year? Did you choose to do that and quote-unquote exploit yourself to the NFL owners, or were you forced to do that? Because that, to me, is the end of the discussion. You make your choices. Do I want to really go into the military where I know I could be sent to a foreign country and be shot or captured and beheaded? Do I really want to do that? That's a terrible thought. But you know what? Nobody's forcing you to do that. We don't have a draft anymore. If you do it, you do it by choice.
Yeah.
And then whatever happens to you after that is something that, you know, you have to kind of take responsibility for and say, I knew that risk. It was worth it to me to defend my country, if that's the route you go. Or I take that risk. It's worth it to me to try to make millions and millions of dollars if I actually pan out in the National Football League.
Yeah, and incidentally, I found the list. It depends on what year level you're in. Example, a rookie minimum salary is $450,000. A 10-year vet would get $985,000 and everything in between. So just randomly throwing those numbers out there because I just found that.
The only one I wanted, Jim, was the low end, the rookie end. Because,
the rookie end, $450,000.
Because of what Justin talked about when he said, you know, the average length of time in the NFL is 2.5 years.
Yeah.
So, okay. The league minimum for a rookie is $450.
Yep.
And what about for a 1 year vet?
A 1 year vet is $525, 2 years $600, 3 years $675.
Stop there. So let's say you played 2 years in the league. Your rookie year you got $450,000. Your second year you got $525,000.
Okay.
By my count, that's $975,000. So we're going to say you got $1 million for 2 years in the league if you don't even make it to the league average of 2.5. And if you get it to the league average of 2.5, then let's say you get cut mid-season, you get half of that $600,000 minimum salary for that guy with 2 years is 2 years.
So you're about 1.25 or so, somewhere in that neighborhood.
So now you take out your agent fee, which is usually around 3 or 4%, and you take out your taxes, and you are still walking away with hundreds of thousands of dollars for 2.5 years of work.
True.
Whereas if you didn't make the choice to go to that league where you might get chewed up and spit out after 2 years, and you had gone into the workforce with a college degree or without, how many people do you know, Jim, that can walk out of college or walk out of high school if you don't go to college without a diploma or without a degree and make hundreds of thousands of dollars in 2 years?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who can do that. Unless you're Mark Zuckerberg and you found your own company because you're a code writing genius. You know, that's the Facebook guy for those who don't. Of course, you know. But unless you're doing something like that where you have invented a better mousetrap, where you are, and you know the old saying, build a better mousetrap, the world would beat a path to your door. If you have done something extraordinary, you are extraordinary. For the 99.99999% of the population, which is ordinary, instead of extraordinary, we're not making hundreds of thousands of dollars in any field in 2 years, in any field of study, or any industry, or any profession, or any career outside of professional sports. Unless doctors aren't making that much in year one or two. Sorry, not happening. Surgeons aren't going to make $450,000, $525,000, and $600,000 in years zero years of experience, 1 and 2 years experience in the league or in their profession. Surgeons aren't going to make that kind of money. And if they do, these are people that had to pay a hell of a lot more money for their educations than the athlete did,
right,
who got a free ride through college or through 2 or 3 years of college, wherever it is before they came out, and then went to make that money. The surgeon has to take out loans for their bachelor's degree, for their graduate work, for their medical degree, et cetera, et cetera. So my point is, even if you get chewed up and spit out, you are walking away now into the workforce, and it doesn't matter what you're going to do for the rest of your life. You're going to walk out of there with $600,000 or $700,000 already in your bank account. You have life, by the short hairs. You are in control here, and so much more. So much of a bigger and better way than anybody else in your age bracket is.
And that's totally true. And again, my main whole point to for my end of it is that, you know, it'd be a fun discussion to have, you know, to really figure out the quirks especially the three major ones. I'm not going to count hockey in this one, but at least baseball, basketball, football. It'd be a fun discussion to have some of those quirks, you know, and how they differ. But we can't do that. We can't do that because idiocy got thrown into the whole thing. Idiocy that is just not needed right now.
No,
we have too much of it already.
It's also not valid. And that was the other part, too. And it wasn't just the Bennetts. And I want to be clear about this, too. I'm criticizing the Bennetts for bringing race into the discussion of how much NFL players are made, as if somehow black players are paid less than white players. And they're not. They're on the same scales. Again, you know, one of the richest contracts in the league belongs to whom? The NFL's reigning MVP, Cam Newton, for crying out loud. Von Miller got the richest contract in the league. And last time I checked, he's a black outside linebacker on pass rusher for the Denver Broncos. Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have some of the best contracts in the league. They're white guys. Okay, in other words, it's not about your color. It's about how good you are and about how much value you bring to that particular franchise. Race should not be brought up. I condemn the Bennetts for doing it, but I will then condemn white talk show host, guy, anchor, whatever you want to call Kellerman in his role at ESPN, who stood there and exacerbated that tenfold and said, yeah, they really are. They're exploiting black athletes. These white owners are exploiting black athletes, which is, how did he say it? A continuation of American history where white owners of black people exploited them for their labor. Do you know how extraordinarily insulting that is to the memories of people who were forced into servitude or to people who, after slavery, but before the Civil Rights Act was passed and were forced to live under Jim Crow laws.
Right,
and
that's real exploitation. That's
exactly.
The real kind.
And those people suffered. They suffered under yep. those things. They couldn't get a fair shake. They couldn't get a job. They couldn't live where they wanted to live. All these different things that went on because of the color of their skin, those people were exploited. They had to take a job at half the wage, perhaps, of a white person. They were exploited. And going all the way back, like I said, to the darkest time in American history in slavery, they weren't just exploited. They were forced into servitude. They were forced to do what they were at the point of a whip, at the end of a whip.
Looked upon as property, not even people.
Exactly. They weren't even human. They weren't even thought of as human. They were thought of as no differently than the mules that pulled the plows on the farms. Okay? That's how they were thought of, and that's what they were forced to endure. It is so insulting to their memory, and maybe they're even their ancestors. For Michael Bennett to compare, or Martellus Bennett to compare, their plight as $20 million NFL players to that of those who actually endured exploitation because of skin color. They're being paid so incredibly handsomely to do something they are choosing to do, not forced to do, because they're going to be beaten if they don't, choosing to do. And they're actually going to make that comparison. It destroys decent civil conversation about compensation in the NFL, NBA, or anywhere else when you do that.
Which could be, you know, for a show like ours, could be a fun conversation to have, and we can't have that fun.
Yeah, I started to have a little bit of a fun conversation about it during the NBA free agency period.
Right.
And I said, I was reading some of the quotes from some of the players.
No, those were good.
They were hilarious. Some of the NFL players are like, man, we better get the NFLPA on the phone. Man, Mozgov just got $64 million.
That's funny.
And we can talk, because I remember saying, wait, what? Michael Conley, who might be the 13th or 14th best point guard in the NBA? Point guard, let alone player. Just got the league's richest contract. He's going to make more money than, say, Von Miller is.
Yeah.
He's going to make more money than, say, Cam Newton is. He's going to make more money than, say, I don't know, pick your guy is. You know, there's something wrong there. That's a fun sports conversation. Who deserves more money? The basketball players, because they got to go 82 nights a year rather than football that only have 16? Or the football players who 16 beat up their bodies more than any 10 NBA games could? To those guys.
Or the concept of, hey, should the guaranteed, unguaranteed, should that be put in the NBA like NFL?
Yeah.
You know, that'd be a fun conversation to have. And there's so many different opinions, and none of them on that level are wrong.
Exactly. But then you go ahead and put race into it, and you take all of that off the table. All right. I hear the music playing. That means drive time is right around the corner here. Mike Miller's got you covered there, so make sure you stick around and listen to Mike. And tomorrow afternoon,
baseball after that, by the way, Orioles-Rangers on ESPN, 6 o'clock pregame time right after drive time.
There you go. Thank you very much for the programming note. We'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on the next extravaganza. Have a great night.